A base hit here would likely give the Blue Jays the lead with two in scoring position and two down. Law sets, and again the 2-2. And it's driven to center. And it is gone! What a huge hit for Teoscar Hernandez and the Blue Jays. They lead 5-3.
Hey, what's going on? It's At the Letters for Thursday, August 4th, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Arden's Welling here in Minneapolis, ahead of the Blue Jays series against the Minnesota Twins. Bendixson Smith is in Toronto. Our producers are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. Ben, pretty clear where we have to start today. The MLB trade deadline has come and gone. The Blue Jays have made a number of moves. You've had a little time to digest. A little time to think about it and get out of the pressure cooker that is deadline day and sort of reflect on it. How are you feeling right now about what the Blue Jays were able to accomplish at the MLB trade deadline?
Well, you know, there's a lot to get to. It was a busy deadline. They made, what was it, four trades, I guess, if you count Jeremy Beasley, which, you know, that's debatable. But they were busy. I think they had probably three quarters of a good deadline. None of the moves that they made, I think, really, or I should say, they all make sense. You know, to acquire Anthony Bass and Zach Pop, that makes sense. To acquire Whit Merrifield, that should help them. And then Mitch White provides some nice depth to the pitching staff as well. So I get all those moves. Now, I just think they needed one more. I think that they're one reliever short. And when you look ahead at October, as we've been doing now for weeks, if not months on ATL, it's been pretty clear that they would need some more help, some more swing and miss relievers that you're comfortable handing the ball to with the season on the line, whether it's game three of the wild card or game five of the DS or, you know, game five of the ALCS, if you get that far. And I still don't see a lot of options that you're really comfortable with in this Blue Jays bullpen. Anthony Bass might be one of them, but to me, they're still light on that front. And so the deadline is underwhelming.
Yeah, I think it was more of a floor deadline than a ceiling deadline, right? Like the Blue Jays certainly did not add the level of impact that, say, the New York Yankees did with Franky Montas, or the Seattle Mariners with Luis Castillo. The Twins get Tyler Mahle. The Astros did like some interesting and intelligent stuff. I thought like it was more of a address depth and address the floor and like raise that level towards sort of the bottom of the roster rather than the top end, because like you're right, Anthony Bass is having a tremendous season, top 10 in ERA and FIP this year and as far as relievers go. But yeah, it's not, you know, it's not the premium high end swing and miss like, hey, here's Jorge Lopez, hey, here's Joe Jimenez, David Robertson type of thing for this bullpen. So like it's interesting, like you look at each of these deals, right? Like you look at Bass and Pop, you look at the Merrifield deal, you look at the Mitch White deal. I like them each in a vacuum. Like I understand all of them, and I think they all make the Blue Jays better. And if these deals have like trickled out, those three deals over the span of like 6 weeks, and the Blue Jays just made each of them, I would say, yeah, like that's a good deal. Like that's a good trade for the Blue Jays. They got better. I think they gained value in these deals. They got control with each of these players. You know, they made their team better. But when you kind of look at the deadline in totality, yeah, it is sort of missing that impact. Like if you had added a Robertson to this deadline, or you had added and obviously Jimenez didn't move, but if you had added like a Lopez certainly to this deadline, it's okay, here's an A for the Blue Jays. Like you addressed every need and you have bolstered yourself for a deep playoff run and made this team really better in like a really impactful way. But yeah, it does leave a little something to be desired, I think, what the Blue Jays did.
Yeah, I think that's fair for sure. I mean, you look at the other teams and they improve more than the Blue Jays did. I mean, the Blue Jays now are better than they were a week ago. So that's good in a sense. At the same time, you know, the Yankees, Astros, Twins, Mariners, they pushed it forward more. So the Blue Jays, relative to those teams, then actually lose some ground. And, you know, I think Anthony Bass is someone that you could give the ball to in a crucial moment for your season. But, you know, ultimately, there are probably going to be a lot of crucial moments in this Blue Jays playoff run if it goes where they want it to. And aside from Romano, Jimmy Garcia, and now Bass potentially, I just don't see enough arms. And I think there was a case to add one more. And even if it had meant, in my opinion, giving up a good prospect, like if Zulueta had been traded, but they had gotten, let's say it's I know Bednar's hurt. So let's say it's Joe Jimenez. That's a pretty big price to pay. You know, maybe the Tigers send a prospect back to even the scales a little bit. Whatever the case, there are ways to do this. But if the fundamental core of the deal is you're sending Zulueta, you're getting a controllable impact reliever, I think that the Blue Jays organization would be in a better spot because you would have given the players in that clubhouse a real boost. Not to say that the existing players aren't going to help and aren't going to push this forward, but they would have really nudged it forward, I think, even more with a second reliever. Because right now, the bullpen, it still doesn't look great. It looks okay. It'll be good enough to get them to the playoffs. I'm pretty sure of that. But once they're there, I'm not convinced that there's enough swing and miss in the bullpen.
Well, you just think about the layers of bullpen arms that you need to get through the postseason when it really is just about getting outs and when starters are going, you know, shorter than they are in the regular season. I mean, even your best starters, I mean, it's pretty rare they go a full trip through the order a third time. So like if you're the Atlanta Braves, like it is, here's Colin McHugh in the sixth, and then here's AJ Minter, and here's now Iglesias setting up for Kenley Jansen. Maybe Kirby Yates is going to be like a part of that bullpen as well in the postseason. I mean, that's, I think, the layers that it takes, like the amount of quality you need coming out of your bullpen to get through a deep postseason series. I don't know that the Blue Jays have that quality right now in their big league bullpen, to your point. Like, I think it puts a ton of pressure on internal candidates to show up and be that quality, whether that's Nate Pearson or Julian Merriweather coming off the IL and showing up and getting big outs in really crucial situations, whether that's, like you said, a Zulueta coming up from the minors or a Hayden Younger, like completely untested guys at the big league level. There's a lot of pressure now on the Blue Jays having one of those names pop and one of those names emerge as a very legit high leverage candidate in the postseason, when you are staring down like the heart of the Astros order or the heart of the Yankees order or the Rays, whoever, late in a game, and you need to miss some bats.
And I just think that if you're, I'm not saying the Jays are expecting this, but let's say if there's anyone out there who's thinking that, you know, it's going to be a Hayden Younger or a Zulueta or a Pearson or a Merriweather who can get to that level, man, you are putting so much on those guys. That is a huge, huge ask, and one that, you know, would be expecting something of them that, except for Merriweather, who has been that guy before, none of them have been that guy in the major leagues before. So it's just an immense leap of faith to be taking. And I think, too, like, so now they're okay. You know, like, if the Blue Jays played a three-game series tomorrow with their season on the line, they'd be actually okay because you have Jimmy Garcia and Romano and Bass, and okay, all right, they could make that work. Here's the thing, though. What happens if, you know, there's a play and Jimmy Garcia rolls his ankle? Or what happens if Jordan Romano's lat starts barking? Or both? And like, then you're really in a bad spot. And we've already seen it in the starting rotation to some extent. And obviously, the Jays would have known before the deadline that Stripling was headed for the IL in all likelihood. Didn't announce that for good reason. You don't want other teams to kind of prey on your vulnerability at that point. But that means that Stripling, at least for a short period of time, is unavailable. So does that mean Mitch White slots into the rotation? Okay, fair enough. But what happens now? Like, Kikuchi is all of a sudden a very, very important member of this rotation. You know, you need him in that rotation, taking turns every fifth day. And what if, you know, we saw Manoah take a ground ball off the elbow on the weekend? You're one of those things away from, I mean, it couldn't possibly be Thomas Hatch, but I guess Casey Lawrence, like, you know, it's, you don't have a ton of depth there. And so that's where, you know, they were in on Castillo on the periphery. They, from what I understand, had interest in Montas as well. But that's where adding someone in addition to a Mitch White, who has options, you can do some different things there. But that's where that really would have helped for the rotation as well as for the bullpen. So all of this, to me, it just leads to, like, I don't know, I'd probably give it a C. Like, I'm not saying they failed, but it wasn't great.
Yeah, and I'd love to know how, like, the Blue Jays internally really feel about the outcome of the deadline, right? Because as you said, like, interest in Castillo, in on Montas, like, obviously they were trying to do something more impactful and it didn't come through. And it's not always going to work out for you at every deadline, right? Like, sometimes, like, your best offer is not going to be the other best offer from another team. And I think that, you know, you even look at the timing of the deals and it kind of tells us something about maybe the Blue Jays trying to do something more meaningful than they were able to, right? Like you look at when Bass and Pop, when that acquisition was made, it was earlier in the day on deadline day. Like that tells us the Blue Jays liked that deal. Like it was a top option for them. They were really motivated to get it done. So they got that deal done with Kim Ng, like bang, bring those players in. Cool. But then you look at when Mitch White and Whit Merrifield happened. I mean, that broke literal moments before the deadline. And like even just, you know, Ross Atkins alluded to the fact that Whit Merrifield, like that acquisition happened right up against the buzzer. So that sort of tells us that wasn't plan A, right? Like it's pretty safe to assume that those were contingency options that were likely triggered in the dying moments of the day when other stuff fell through. So I mean, was that because Syndergaard and Iglesias, there was something there and the Blue Jays weren't able to finish something on those days? I mean, does it, you know, do the dominoes actually begin back with Montas and Trevino to the Yankees? Like, did the Blue Jays feel like they made a really good offer there and just kind of got edged out and Oakland just liked the names and the Yankees offer better? You look at the prices this deadline, you look at what the Mariners paid for Castillo. It was a huge price. And the Blue Jays, what do we know about them? They are very disciplined, very objective. They have their values. They have their walkaway points. And it is their ethos to not differ from that and to look at things unemotionally and in a very reasonable and responsible way that takes care of like the long-term projection of, you know, of your club that looks towards 2023 and 24 as well. And who are going to be our young players who are, you know, going to be coming up and supplementing our roster from within. We can't sacrifice too much of that future just in order to, you know, overpay today and lose a trade today. Like, I don't think that the Blue Jays are ever going to be this like overpay, what's one more young prospect type of team. Like, I think they're always just going to be very measured and disciplined and rational about everything. And kind of like, what's the Andrew Friedman quote, right? Like, if you're rational on every free agent and every trade, you're probably going to finish in second and third place a lot of the time. That's the reality of the MLB ecosystem, right? But I think that like that's probably what happened for the Blue Jays at this deadline. I think they probably feel like they made strong offers on a lot of more impactful players, but the way the market played out this year, I think that those offers weren't strong enough. It really was a bit of a seller's market.
Yeah, and some of the sellers, I mean, the Reds did great. Awesome to see the return there. That's probably a long time in the making for that team to turn around, but they certainly got some good prospects back. You also saw, I mean, this is kind of an aside, but you know, teams like the Orioles selling, which shifts things a little bit in the American League playoff picture. But you know, going back to the idea of the Jays and how aggressive they were, I think what you said makes sense. And I think that that definitely reflects my interpretation of this organization. Like, I don't think that they're out there trying to be reckless. They want to be measured, and they were measured in this case. Now, you know, I think it's also worth pointing out, because this is, you know, probably a bit of a downer start to the podcast, you know, which is to be expected, but it's worth pointing out, okay, they're still, in my opinion, the third best team in the American League. Yankees and Astros are better. I think the Jays are the third best team. So they're in a good spot. They're going to make the playoffs in all likelihood. You look at the teams pushing for those wild card berths. White Sox did absolutely nothing. Guardians did nothing. Orioles sold. So, I mean, Jays are making it. It's a question of what kind of seeding they get. And it's also worth noting, I think, you know, the Jays, if you look back at last winter, you know, they added big. You know, they added Chapman, among others. Gausman, 100 million plus. Last deadline, they added Berríos. The previous winter, they added Springer, they added Semien. The previous deadline, they added Ray, they added Taiwan Walker, they added Stripling. So you look back at kind of these periods of time where they've had the chance to add, we've gotten used to them being really aggressive. We've gotten used to them pulling off big ads. And this time they really didn't do it. You know, you're not necessarily going to have home runs every single time. I definitely don't think they hit a home run this deadline. I don't think it was good enough, frankly, but it's worth putting in the context of this has been a team that has been adding pretty aggressively.
Yeah, and they make multiple moves at every deadline is the other thing. Like, I can't think of a deadline where the Blue Jays had like a Guardians deadline, like you were saying, where they're just kind of like, yeah, we just didn't do anything.
We're good.
Yeah, we're fine. You know, like they find ways to improve at every deadline. Cause like, and we talked about this last week, a couple of weeks ago, like they just look at it they don't look at the deadline as about the next 2 months. Like they look at it as about the next 2 to 3 to 5 to 10 years. Like they think about, you know, how like this is a juncture where every GM across baseball is engaged, where lots of teams are, you know, have talent to move, where you can like address your roster for 23, 24, 25. Like it's not just about this playoff run for them. Like you think about when talent changes clubs, like when you can actually acquire talent in the MLB calendar, offseason deadline. You don't see a ton of trades between April and the end of July, certainly not for impact talent. And obviously you don't see any trades after July until the end of the World Series. So really it's offseason and deadline. That's when you can do this stuff. So I think that's why they put a ton of time and energy into it. I think that's why they always make moves at the deadline. And I don't know, like say we took the names out of it, right? Like say we forget the names and say we just said, look, I told you a week ago, the Blue Jays at the deadline are going to add a top 10 reliever in terms of ERA and FIP this season. Like middle innings, like sinker baller guy who throws 97, a back end starter swingman type with a like sub 4 ERA. And a utility bench piece slash guy who has been playing every day with a high contact bat, covers a bunch of defensive positions, steals bases. Like, would you say, yeah, that sounds about right?
That's a great point. I think that if you had presented that, I mean, there certainly are some strong elements there to a good deadline for the Jays. Now, I think the other thing that you would have to add in is that their number 4 starter is injured. So Stripling, you know, not available to the extent that you would have expected him, at least for the next couple of weeks. So to me, I still think that that combination of players would be light on the swing and miss that the Blue Jays need. Because as nice as it is to have Merrifield, as nice as it is to have a Mitch White, you just need those arms. And as some longtime baseball people have pointed out recently, more often than not, season on the line, it's win or go home, it's a reliever with the ball in their hands. And I don't know if you're comfortable with David Phelps or Trevor Richards being that guy. And I think it won't be second guessing if, you know, the Jays in the course of their wild card series run into some trouble with those guys on the mound or Tim Mesa on the mound and their season ends, they won't have done enough. And I think it'll be really easy at that point to point back and say, look, they should have added more at the deadline. And that's just not a place you want to be in when you have this good of a core. So again, I just think they were one arm short.
Yeah, and I'd say we agree on that. The one trade that stands out to me, honestly, was David Robertson to the Phillies. And that's kind of the one that I thought, like I feel the Blue Jays probably could have beat the price that was paid to the Cubs there. And you never know. And obviously you got to do a little bit of digging and kind of figure out like how that played out, what the exact circumstances were. But like that is the one that sort of stands out to me is kind of peculiar. Were there any other kind of deals or players that moved at the deadline that you thought, like I think the Blue Jays should have been in on this. And I think the Blue Jays like should have added this guy.
Yeah, I think the Robertson one definitely meets that description for me. I thought Syndergaard could have been interesting just as like a back-end guy, you know, not necessarily, certainly not a front-end starter at this point, but just someone who can help you get there. Clearly, you know, the Jays were linked to him, appeared to have some real interest in him. So that could have been one. And I think too, like, I understand like the Raisel Iglesias price is very high, just literally as far as his salary, earning $48 million over the course of the next 3 years. I don't know. I mean, at a certain point, if the cost and prospects is pretty low, that's the kind of move where like you're getting a lot of swing and miss. He strikes out a third of the batters he faces. So I get the trepidation, if there was any, to putting out that kind of expense to a reliever. But at the same time, those are the relievers who are really good. And at a certain point, you need really good relievers and a little bit less of Trevor Richards and Matt Gage and Jeremy Beasley obviously traded to the Pirates, but there was room for one more. I think Robertson, Syndergaard, those are two. The Phillies actually had a pretty nice deadline.
Man, the Iglesias one, like it's such the whole thing's a head scratcher, right? Because like if you're the Angels, like what are you doing right now? You just signed this guy to like a long-term big money deal and now you're flipping him. Like if I'm Shohei Ohtani looking at that organization, I'm like, why would I want to, like what did you do at the debt? Like why are you going to win going forward? Like how are you like even being good to the players that you're committing to? Like it just is not like a good signal to your players internally or even like to the industry, just about what you're doing as an organization. But like for the Blue Jays to take on Iglesias, it would have been interesting to know like what the prospect cost would have been along with like the money. If it was really marginal prospects, like, I mean, the money, I mean, I don't know if the Blue Jays could have fit in like 16 each of the next 3 years. It would be interesting to know if they could find a way to, because I think Iglesias's stuff is like just as good now as it has been. I know that his results are down a little bit, but I think that he would probably project pretty well going forward just based on how he's throwing the ball. But I mean, it would be, there would be some risk there certainly in taking on like $16 million each of the next 3 years for a reliever. Like that would make the Blue Jays uncomfortable. I think it would make a lot of front offices uncomfortable, like that kind of outlay for a guy like him. When it comes to Syndergaard, am I wrong for kind of preferring Mitch White to Noah Syndergaard?
No.
At this point?
Yeah.
Right? Like, all things considered, you know, like, we know this isn't prime Syndergaard, right? Like, this is 94, 95, like, contact management Noah Syndergaard. And if that's going to be the case, like, I kind of like the upside in Mitch White better.
Oh,
younger
yeah.
guy. More controllable. I mean, he throws 94 and he's got like a pretty effective slider. And I think that, you know, the curveball's been iffy and he doesn't really use the changeup a lot, but those pitches are there. And there's a lot here for like the Blue Jays pitching department to work on with him and to get him better. On when I just kind of look at how White has performed this year, what he throws, how it would compare to a guy like Syndergaard, I'm kind of taking White just based on the age, based on the controllability over, you know, several seasons, based on the flexibility of him being able to go between the bullpen and starting. Like, that swingman role is not easy, and like changing roles on the fly is not easy. And he's shown the ability to do that. So honestly, like, if it's really back end starter, five and dive, two trips through guy, and then maybe, you know, long man in my bullpen if I need him, like, Mitch White's that guy for me. I don't know if Syndergaard could go back and forth between a bullpen and rotation like that. And also, Syndergaard's a pending free agent, so at least I have Mitch White, who isn't even like ARB eligible until like 2025. I have him under team control for several more seasons.
And I think if it's one or the other, it's easy. Mitch White by far is the player you'd want. No question.
Yeah.
I mean, he is definitely preferable as an acquisition. To me, it's more like, why don't you get both? Because, you know, Mitch White can help you as That's your fair. Six, and Syndergaard can help you as your five. And they would have known that Stripling was going down. So you bring Syndergaard in, he replaces Stripling for the moment. Then you have White, he's optionable, he goes back and forth. He's your next guy up, instead of your next guy up being Casey Lawrence. So my argument would just be get them both.
That's fair. And I think that, like, it's interesting, right? The importance of starting depth does minimize the closer you get to the postseason. And obviously in the playoffs, like, really you need three good starters and a dude, right? And then you feel good in the postseason. And I know there's still 58 games to go, right? Like, there's still, you know, 2 months of baseball to get through. And the Blue Jays are only an injury away from one of their three big dudes from being in a pretty tough spot. But like, assuming health through the end of the year, which is obviously an incredibly, incredibly dangerous assumption, you feel good going into the postseason with like Manoah, Gausman, Berríos as your three big dudes, and then one of Kikuchi, White, Stripling being your guy. And you feel good going into the postseason with that. But I do allow that you could use some more starting depth over the next 6 weeks.
And here's another scenario to consider, okay? So, do you know off the top of your head if there's an off day after the wild card series before the division series?
I don't.
Okay. So let's say that there is. Let's be generous to the Blue Jays and say that there is. Now, let's say that they play a 3-game wild card series that goes 3 games. So you're using Gausman, Manoah, Berríos. They'll have the chance to line those guys up. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say you win. Yeah. Okay. Now, you say Kikuchi at this point mm-hmm. is your starter. Maybe it's Ross Stripling, but he's hurt right now, so I'm not going to assume that he's just going to be back. So you say Kikuchi is now your game one and game five starter in the division series. Like, you can see why they went after Castillo. You can see why they had some interest in Montas. And I hadn't even considered this actually until recently, but there are scenarios where you actually really do need four starters.
That's interesting. Yeah. No, you're totally right. Like, as soon as you start going down that path, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Here we go. It's Kikuchi or like maybe opener and a guy
right.
to start that series, just depending on where Kikuchi's at. Right. It might be like 2 innings of Nate Pearson followed by Mitch White bulk.
Well, exactly.
In that game.
And all of this just underscores, just get one more arm. Get one more arm than you thought you need, whether it's a starter or a reliever. And like, I mean, Pop, Bass, and White. You know, I just think there was room for one more there. It's not like they couldn't have found someone on the 40-man to DFA and create room. You know, there are candidates.
No, I think Castillo just like cost
right.
a ton.
And I don't think they should have outbid the Mariners for Castillo.
Right. Castillo cost a ton. And I think on Montas, like, sounds like they were right there and Oakland preferred what they were getting from the Yankees. And then, I mean, what other sort of big starter move? Molly's not vaccinated as far as we know. So what else could they have really done?
Martin Perez, I mean, I guess Syndergaard wasn't traded. Right? Syndergaard.
Yeah, Martin Perez.
I mean, there are guys that, you know, and who thought Mitch White was available? Like, there are dozens of pitchers on each major league team. I'm sure they could have found someone.
It is funny how it always, every deadline ends up being the guys that we don't talk about that the Blue Jays acquire. Like, how much breath did we spend on Zach Pop and Mitch White and Whit Merrifield, of all people, before the deadline, right? Like, think about how much time we spent talking about Detroit Tigers relievers and how much time we spent, you know, talking about Castillo and, you know, I was on Chad Kuhl and you were on Drew Smyly, right? Like, all the time we spent talking about these players. And ultimately, it seems like reliably every deadline, it is the guys that are not on your radar at all that the Blue Jays end up acquiring.
That's right. My Drew Smyly prediction was way off. So apologies to anyone who frantically brought up his baseball savant page. It did not happen.
Let's take a break. When we come back, maybe we'll talk a bit about what the Blue Jays actually have acquired, like what Bass and Pop and Whit Merrifield in particular are going to mean for this club going forward and cast ahead to the final couple months of the season as we enter the longest stretch run in all of sports. Just 2 more months of baseball before we get to the postseason. Everybody strap in. All that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. And it is time now for Major League Beer for Major League Baseball. Brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Ben, this was the first MLB trade deadline in an expanded postseason world. How do you think that impacted the moves we saw at the deadline? Lots of speculation coming into it. Are there going to be more buyers? Are there going to be fewer teams willing to sell? Like, more teams on the fence? You know, a lot of people wondering how the extra wildcard spot would impact activity at the trade deadline. But now that we're on the other side of it, what did you glean?
You know, I've got two theories here. So one would be that it pushed things later. I think the teams wanted to wait more, get a sense of where they fit in the picture, and figure out, are we contending or not? And so we saw a lot of activity. Like, deadline day was really busy. And I think it was pretty condensed, right? Like, in those final few days, final few hours, as opposed to a lot of July 21st, 22nd activity. So that's my first kind of theory. We'll see if that continues next year. And the second one is, you know, I think the teams that were pushing for that third wild card to maybe get into that third wild card, they were really cautious. Like, the Orioles, the Guardians, the White Sox, they did nothing. I mean, in the case of the Orioles, they actually sold. So my theory there is that teams that are kind of vying for that third wild card just didn't value it as much, which kind of makes sense because the more wild cards you add, the less valuable they are. It's certainly different than it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago when getting into the wild card, that put you in the division series. So I just saw teams not really valuing that third wild card as much and kind of retreating as opposed to pushing.
I think most teams just think, like, get into the dance and that's it, then see what happens, right? When you see the Atlanta Braves win the World Series last year, when you see the Washington Nationals win the World Series a couple of years ago, you even go back to the Royals in 15, it's like, just get in, right? Get into the tournament and then try to be healthy and hot in the tournament and see what happens, right? So every team is going to have, like, very objective and realistic postseason probabilities internally. Like, that's why we use the Fangraphs playoff odds so much, because those are, like, the best ones that we have publicly available that are objective and kind of give us an idea of how teams project going forward. Like, they are not sacred, but, like, I think that's how teams make decisions. They think about their own odds of reaching the postseason. They think about how moves could increase those odds going forward, and that's how they decide whether those moves are worth it or not. And I think that speaks to why certain teams were more aggressive and other teams weren't at the deadline, because for some, the value proposition just didn't make sense to them. And for others, I mean, you look at the Blue Jays, like, they should feel pretty confident about making the postseason right now. I think Fangraphs would have them up over 95%, and I'm sure that internally they're right around there as well. So, like, by really going above and beyond and making super impactful moves and making trades where maybe the value doesn't make sense, but, you know, you bring in like a Luis Castillo and a Raisel Iglesias, like, yeah, that makes you a lot better, but you're probably getting into the tournament anyway, and anything can happen in the tournament. So just get into the tournament and preserve like the long-term viability and sustainability of your franchise. I think that's the, you know, the calculus came down to for a lot of clubs. So I will say this, there is huge leverage, and this is Blue Jays specific, there's huge leverage in winning the first wildcard spot if you're the Toronto Blue Jays in the American League. You win that first wildcard spot, I still think the AL East is out of reach. I think the Yankees, they got better at the deadline, and I know that they just are coming off of an unideal July, but I think, you know, they've still got like 11, 12 game lead. They should win the AL East pretty easily. So the Blue Jays are competing for wildcard spots now. You win that first wildcard spot, you host all three games of the wildcard series. That is massive. If you let Seattle win that first wild card spot, you are now going from finishing your season in Baltimore on the road, flying across continent to play the Mariners at their ballpark on the West Coast. You were giving them home field advantage. Robbie Ray didn't come to Toronto when the Mariners came up to Toronto this season. I don't know if his circumstances have changed, but if you host all three wild card games as the Blue Jays, it's a possibility Robbie Ray ain't coming up to play in Toronto. You even think about it, if it's the Rays, right, who are the other club that's in that wild card hunt right now, if they surge, if they find some wins and take that first wild card spot, okay, now maybe the Blue Jays are going to the Trop for three games, a ballpark where historically they have had very poor success over the last several years. And oh, by the way, you're giving Kevin Cash final serve with like his uber flexible lineup of lefties and righties and relievers who all match up really well. There is big time leverage in the Blue Jays winning that first wildcard spot.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting too, like noticing how those other contenders ended up aligning themselves or positioning themselves for these final couple months. And a team like the Mariners, I mean, they definitely added meaningfully with Castillo. The Rays added too. I mean, the Peralta deal is a nice one for them to kind of move things forward. Jose Siri, we'll see what he can do for the Rays. But then, you know, the Orioles, and remember, the Blue Jays have 15 games remaining against the Orioles, right? So they've got, I mean, that's more than a quarter of their games remaining against an Orioles team that, in my opinion, wasn't good to begin with. And obviously, Michael Elias shares that opinion because they traded Trey Mancini and Jorge Lopez. And so now the Orioles are even worse. So the Jays actually kind of benefit, because when the Yankees were playing the Orioles earlier in the season, they actually had a capable first baseman and a pretty good closer. Take those guys away, it's a bit of a different story. So I think for the Jays, you have to take advantage of those 15 games. You know, maybe it's a 9-6, maybe it's a 10-5, but certainly that sort of finish is in play, and that benefits the Jays instead of if the Orioles had decided they wanted to push in and maybe be a buyer.
The Orioles are like a game out of a wild card spot right now. One game. Like, it's the same distance that like the St. Louis Cardinals have in the NL from being in the wild card position. You see the Cardinals like behaving very differently than the Orioles did at this deadline. That's because internally, like, you're just very realistic about your roster and how you project and whether it is realistic or not that you're really going to insert yourself into this conversation, or whether it makes sense to take the long view. I liked that Quintana Stratton deal, by the way, for the Cardinals. Like, Chris Stratton was a guy last deadline I was like, oh, the Blue Jays should go trade for this guy. Like, you know, really, you know, good swingman with you know, with good stuff, who would be a good fit for the Blue Jays. So I like that deal for the Cardinals. Maybe go ahead, what do you got?
I was just gonna say, I also like the Montgomery pickup. They seem to like them some soft tossing lefties, and I liked what the Yankees did mostly. I did not like the Yankees trading Jordan Montgomery for Harrison Bader. You're getting an injured outfielder for a actually pretty good major league starting pitcher. That is, you're trading away starting pitching depth too readily at that point.
We should probably talk about like what the Blue Jays actually got, what they're going to mean going forward. We could start with Anthony Bass, who obviously, I mean, he, like, Blue Jays fans will remember him from 2020. And he's a very different guy now. In 2020, he was sinker heavy with a slider off of it. Now he is slider heavy with a sinker off of it, but he's also kind of using the sinker differently. And essentially it's, you know, the slider goes glove side and the sinker goes arm side. And he's trying to tunnel those two pitches and get the separation between them and get hitters guessing. And he's trying to live on the edges and live down in the zone, land those pitches on the plate just enough to get a bunch of called strikes, but then also land them off the plate, get hitters swinging, get them chasing as well. He's got a high called strike percentage. He's got a high chase rate. It's been really good. He's got like a 1.4 ERA and a 2 FIP this year. I mean, like, he's been really, really solid. There isn't a ton of like name brand value there with Anthony Bass, but like, just order your MLB relievers on Fangraphs and he's in the top 10. I mean, he's having a lot of success. He's going to add something to the Blue Jays bullpen.
Yeah, he's a really good pickup. I mean, I think he's as good as a David Robertson, a Daniel Bard. And sometimes these guys come to it later in their careers, you know, in their 30s. He's a different pitcher now than the one he was when he pitched for the Blue Jays a couple of years ago. Like you said, the slider has been a really good pitch and he's throwing it more. So you combine a good slider that he's using a lot with a fastball at 95. It's just a good combination. So Bass is a really good pickup and it's pretty affordable too. $3 million this year and then an option for the team for 2023 that I would fully expect they'll exercise at this point for another $3 million. So again, there's a bit of a long-term element here with Bass.
Yeah, just another $3 million next year. I think it's a pretty much a no-brainer that the Blue Jays pick up that option this winter. You know, if he's healthy and effective, which, you know, certainly it's the track record this season, is that he will be. I mean, that was kind of a throughway with all of the Blue Jays acquisitions at this trade deadline, is that, like, it's not just about 2022. Like, they have control, if they want it, over every player that they acquired for 2023 as well. In the case of Zach Pop, I mean, they got control over him for, you know, several more years. It's through 2027, really. And like, it can be a complete fool's errand to try to like project reliever performance over more than the span of like a few months and a few years. And I mean, how many relievers actually play out the entirety of their club control without at some point being non-tendered or DFA'd? I mean, like, it's almost the expectation when it comes to relievers. But like, if the Blue Jays are able to turn Zach Pop into something with the huge sinker, like 97, 98 at the bottom of the zone, friggin' elite ground ball rates, optionable right now, which is super, super valuable in today's game. The 13 pitcher limit world, having optionable relievers in your bullpen just gives you so much more flexibility, and a slider that like he hasn't had a ton of success with this year, hasn't really needed this year, but I think that the Blue Jays feel strongly about and want him to continue developing. If they're able to sort of turn him into something as a reliever, he could be part of this bullpen for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Brampton's own Zach Pop, someone that has been in pro ball for a long time, though, even though he's not very old. But that sinker is really intriguing. And yeah, he's a good pitcher. I mean, like you say, with the options and with the sinker, this is someone who can help you get through a season. And I think the reason I like the Zach Pop deal is honestly more for 2023 than it is for right now. I think he's someone who can help you get through a long baseball season and be a good relief pitcher. Now, the Jays look like they're going to get through this season and be in the playoffs. So to me, the bigger concern was more what happens once you're there. And again, like, he could be a guy who's on their playoff roster, so he might actually have a role in the postseason. But I like this for 23 and beyond for the Jays, and I'm intrigued to see that sinker in action.
Yeah, I think just the development of that second pitch is going to be huge. So he's only a one pitch guy, but I mean, look, if he's throwing that one pitch right at the bottom of the zone, as he has been, like a sinker at 97, 98, sort of puts a hitter in an impossible position, right? Because either you take it and you hope that it isn't called a strike, you hope that you get a call that goes your way, or you swing at it and beat it into the ground. Right. And like, that's the position Zach Pop's been putting hitters in this year. And that's why he has ground ball rate that he has. That's why he has as many quick outs as he has. Zach Pop's averaging 3.29 pitches per plate appearance this season. There are 460 pitchers across MLB that have thrown at least 20 innings this season. That pitches per plate appearance ranks second.
Wow.
Zach Pop gets very quick outs. Wow. And it's because he's just pounding sinkers down the zone. So as long as he can control and command that pitch, as long as it's 97 to 99 at the bottom of the zone with big sink, just be Zach Britton, right?
Yeah.
there's a formula there. It's a lot harder, obviously, to maintain that control and command, particularly when you're throwing as hard as he is. But I mean, it's working so far. And if the Blue Jays can develop the slider into more of a weapon than it's been this year, yeah, there could be something there. So like you, I'm thinking, yeah, like this could be an impactful addition for many years to come. It's why I keep coming back to the fact that I don't know that the Blue Jays look at this deadline just as the next 2 months, just as 2022 right. postseason. I think that with Bass, with Pop, with White, and even with Whit Merrifield, they're thinking about seasons to come as well.
Right. I mean, they're all players who can be retained long-term, which is interesting. And, you know, the prospect return that the Jays gave up wasn't overwhelming. I mean, Jordan Groshans is someone who's really not hitting for power. He went the other way in the Pop-Bass deal. So you're not, unless there's something that's going to change, he certainly doesn't look like a power hitter at this point. And then the other name that's really interesting is Nick Frasso, who went to the Dodgers in the Mitch White deal. He's really kind of pitching great in the last little while and is a name that I kind of thought might be traded because he's really delivering results. Lower minors so far, but someone to really keep an eye on. I like that return for the Dodgers, and I think Frasso's a name to watch.
Big time velo with him. There's some elbow issues as well, and like there's a lot of reliever risks certainly with Frasso. But yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise if Frasso was a really good reliever in the Dodgers bullpen in 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Maybe even sooner. He's old for the level he's at right now.
Of all the names that the Jays gave up, I think Frasso's the one that's most likely to come back and bite them.
Yeah, and the Dodgers have a pretty good track record of taking guys like that and turning them into really useful big league pitches, but you know, you want to get something, you got to give something up.
Exactly. So I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think that's the name to watch. I think that's a trade worth making, and Mitch White is a good return.
Totally. When it comes to, oh, actually, I also want to mention Jordan Groshans, because we'll probably never talk about him again. Like, he had such a interesting tenure, I guess, in the Blue Jays organization. Like, he was part of like that package deal with Adam Klopfenstein, you know, several drafts ago. And it's a funny reminder of how quickly these things transpire, because like you think about it, it doesn't feel like that long ago that Groshans and Klopfenstein draft happened, but we're already up against like this being the offseason when the Blue Jays would have had to add Jordan Groshans to their 40-man roster. Wow. Which is wild, right? Because or expose them to the Rule 5 draft. That's how quickly it happens. And I think that was part of the reason why Groshans was a player that the Blue Jays moved on from at this deadline, not to mention like the fact that power hasn't realized or materialized, but like they weren't going to have a 40-man spot for him this upcoming winter. And I do wonder if a team would have taken a chance on him just based on the pedigree, based on the contact ability, based on the defensive ability. And it's not like the Blue Jays are going to have an opening in the big leagues, either up the middle or at third base, which is probably where Jordan Groshans is going to end up in the near future, right? It's a bit of an area of surplus for them right now. So he made sense as a guy, I think, to trade at this deadline. Obviously, like he had some value, like brought back a really good reliever right now in Bass and a guy with a lot of potential in Pop. Like, I don't think the Jordan Groshans story is over. Like, he's missed so much development time. You think about it, he like was really starting to break out right when he had the foot injury and missed almost an entire year with this weird foot injury. And then bang, pandemic, missed an entire year of development there. He was at the alt site, but wasn't in games. Like the guy didn't play like an actual competitive live game for like 2 years. So I think he just missed a lot of development time. And like big guy, big frame, room to grow into it. I wonder if more power will come just with more development and just with more experience, probably a third baseman long-term, but I'm going to be interested just to see how his career plays out, because I do think there is still more there to come from him. I just think the circumstances around his development and around the Blue Jays roster situation made him somewhat superfluous at this time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he wasn't looking like that long-term fixture that you're going to plug in. Honestly, like I think he looks like a major league utility player long-term. I don't know if you want to,
which is,
you know, a guy who's, which is right? Something, yeah. And sometimes those guys surprise you and become Brandon Drury after enough time. And, you know, they're traded to San Diego and hit a grand slam in their first at-bat with the Padres. Right. So these things can happen. But to me, Groshans, you're not going to put him at third base is your everyday guy if he's hitting for the power that he's hitting right now and slugging whatever it is, 360, 370. So that's maybe a utility player. So I think the Jays did well in that trade. If anything, they should have traded Groshans a year ago in hindsight, right? Or over the offseason, because you probably would have got more. But still, Bass and Pop will help.
Yeah, I still think the Blue Jays did well in that trade. Like, I like the trade for both teams. So let's talk about Whit Merrifield, who is the one like name the Blue Jays have brought in that we haven't talked about yet. And like, so give me the honest answer. When the news came out, Whit Merrifield traded, and there was not yet like a destination. If it was like a John Heyman or a Passan tweet, whoever put out Whit Merrifield traded, did you think there was any way it was going to be to the Toronto Blue Jays?
My mind wasn't even operating at that point. Like I was in such, okay. I was texting and like I'm refreshing Twitter. My, you know, you go back to Twitter, I'm on the desktop. And so you see like the 38 and I'm like, I was just on here like, you know, 4 minutes ago. There are 38 new tweets. So I actually missed that. I think it was Mark Feinsand who tweeted that. So the first time I saw the news of Merrifield, it was Whit Merrifield traded to the Blue Jays. And at that point, I'm trying to confirm and get the return. So
let me put it to you this way. If I told you a week before the deadline that Whit Merrifield was going to be traded at the deadline, I mean, would you have thought there was any way it was going to be the Toronto Blue Jays?
No. No shot. Right. No.
No. I wasn't even considering him, just as I wasn't even considering Molly and similar players, because they didn't come to Canada when their teams came to Toronto to play the Blue Jays. So I just assumed these were not options. It turns out Whit Merrifield was an option for the Blue Jays.
That's what we're led to believe. That's what, you know, I mean, he's on their roster. It's really interesting.
All right. Let's put it out here right now. It would be shocking if Whit Merrifield was not getting vaccinated. I would be stunned if the Blue Jays made this transaction and Whit Merrifield is not going to be vaccinated. Like, are you kidding me? There's no way the Blue Jays would make the transaction. Max Castillo and Samad Taylor, who like I know are not like premium level prospects, but guys with a ton of control. Castillo, both of them young. Castillo's a swingman, like, you know, in the big leagues, has had good results. Samad Taylor is this like huge toolsy guy that scouts are really divided on, but like a lot of people think he would have gone in the Rule 5 draft last winter if it happened. There's no way the Blue Jays are dealing those two players for like a utility guy who can't enter the country where the games are going to take place. Like, it would be shocking and stunning. I would be blown away if that were the case. We're sitting here on the morning of Thursday, August 4th. So we're going to, or I'm going to here in Minneapolis, talk to Whit Merrifield later today and find out whether he is vaccinated, whether he's getting vaccinated. I'll be stunned if he's like, no, I'm not getting vaccinated. Absolutely, yeah. Blown away.
I would be surprised as well.
Wouldn't you be shocked? Wouldn't it be shocking if the Blue Jays made that move?
You know what? It would take more than that to shock me.
Really?
I think, yeah. Put it this way. Like, I fully agree with you. Like, shock is like a big word. I fully agree with you. I think he's
no, I'm and I'm using it. No hyperbole. I would be shocked. Uh-huh. Why would you make this trade if you're the Blue Jays?
So I think the Jays would have gotten an indication, not from Whit Merrifield himself, because, you know, that would be tampering and they wouldn't do that. So I think they would have gotten an indication from Dayton Moore that, you know what, Whit has indicated to us that for a contender, he would likely get the vaccine. So you guys should be good to go here. And they would have got that information from Dayton Moore, and they would have trusted Dayton Moore's word on that. And I kind of think it's really interesting how the Jays have framed it. I think that they've low-key done a really good job in the way that they've said, you know what? This is your decision, Whit Merrifield. We really want to support you and your family, and we're just going to let Whit and his family make this decision. And of course, what they don't say is, unless Whit Merrifield plays ball and gets the vaccine, he's not getting paid when he plays in Canada. He's going to be on the restricted list. He's not going to get service time. His teammates aren't going to respect him, and he's going to be playing half of his games that he otherwise could. So basically, Whit Merrifield has to get the vaccine, and the Blue Jays are putting him in a position where, whether he's fully comfortable with that decision or not, he's pretty much going to have to do it. But I mean, like, I think he'll get it because the incentives are clearly aligned and he's indicated some willingness to consider it. So I think he'll do it. But yeah, I think there's a 96% chance he'll do it.
I think there's a 99.998% chance.
Yeah.
that he'll do it. You know what I mean? Like, and the only way that he wouldn't would be like the doctor like slipped or the pharmacist slid, like it just didn't go in his arm. So like, I just can't imagine a world in which the Blue Jays give up the players that they did in order to get a guy who might not play half their games. Cause this isn't just about the next 2 months. Like Whit Merrifield's under contract next year as well at a pretty reasonable rate.
Yep.
By the way, it's like 6.75, something along those lines. Like this is about 23 as well. Like I can't imagine that the Blue Jays would execute this transaction without being very certain that Whit Merrifield's going to be vaccinated. Like I just think that it's kind of like preposterous to think that they would take that risk.
I think they took the plunge. I think they took the plunge with like a very high hope and not knowing 100% that he would do it. But I don't know. No one's told me that. That's just me reading the tea leaves.
Yeah.
But I think it's...
I just think it would be so out of character.
Yeah. But here's the thing, though. Like, my... I don't know. This is the opinion of one person in the industry. Max Castillo and Samad Taylor, not really a big return. Like, not really a ton of industry value around those two guys from one high-up person. So, for what that's worth.
Sure. But, like, you even think about the Blue Jays who just play the value game on every transaction that they make, right? Like, whatever value they put on Whit Merrifield, think about how much that value would be diminished if you remove half the games, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The value of Whit Merrifield would have been like 2 months plus like the next, you know, 6 months next year, right? So remove half that value. You still think half Whit Merrifield's value would have exceeded the 6 years each of Max Castillo and Samad Taylor?
He's getting the jab, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, he's getting the jab.
I don't think the value proposition would have been there, but I don't know. Maybe you're right. Who knows? Either way, he's going to be vaccinated. I'll be stunned if he's not. What is interesting is when he gets vaccinated, because there is that like 14-day window from the date of either your one dose of Johnson & Johnson or your second dose of Pfizer and Moderna. You have to let those 14 days pass before you can enter the country. So that does like actually, it might jeopardize his availability for the next Blue Jays homestand.
Oh, it almost certainly will.
Unless he got it prior to the deadline, right?
On spec.
Like, it's possible that, you know, Dayton Moore told him like, hey, man, you're getting moved. Here's the teams that are interested in you. Like, maybe you want to speed up this process.
Yeah, it's possible.
I don't know. Yeah. Or it's possible he got for the deadline. It's possible that he hasn't gotten it yet and he's going to get it tomorrow. I don't know, right? Like, it's Thursday, August 4th, and it is like 10 a.m. here in Central Time Zone. So I don't know yet, but we'll
he might not get it till September 1st. We don't know.
We're going to find out, but I'm very, very confident he is going to get it if he is not already. And we'll see if he's able to come to Toronto for the next homestand. But regardless, like will be interesting to see how he fits this roster, where he plays. This is tied up in George Springer's elbow injury and his availability. This is tied up in Santiago Espinal's performance offensively. This is tied up in Kevin Biggio's performance as well. Merrifield, a guy who's like pretty good second baseman. He's played mostly corner outfield. He can play center if you need him to. Ross Atkins mentioned like they could chuck him over at third base. He could play shortstop in a pinch. It's going to be interesting if he is just like kind of this utility, different position every time he's in the lineup guy. It's going to be interesting to see if he's in the lineup every day. That's certainly what he's been for the Royals for a number of years. He's been their leadoff guy for a number of years. It's going to be interesting to see where like the high contact bat fits in the Blue Jays order. I'm just very interested to see how John Schneider deploys him in the weeks and months ahead, because there's a lot of places he could fit, but it's also tied up in a lot of other circumstances.
Yeah, a lot of variables here. Like I wonder, and I want to get back to Merrifield in a second, but like Springer, so he's missed a lot of time. Didn't play much on the weekend and missed the Tampa series. Like at a certain point, you just IL him, because it's really not about the regular season, right? It's really about you want him ready for October. You know, if he's missing more than half the games.
Is your sense that it's something that's going to get better in 10 to 15 days though?
No.
Or is your sense is my sense that it's something that is going to get better once it's addressed in the off season?
Exactly. Exactly. We don't know exactly what's going on in there, but might be something worth looking at in the offseason and addressing then. So I don't know, but it, you know, I guess it's just get him a break, open up a roster spot. It can't hurt to get him some rest.
It would be for the roster flexibility, I think, because I don't think that 10 to 15 days of being on the IL is suddenly going to make George Springer feel better with this issue. Like I just think it's something that needs to, you know, it needs to be addressed in the offseason, right? And so right now, I think they're just trying to steal George Springer like the rest that he can get. I think right now it's like it's a pain tolerance thing. It's a, you know, his ability to play through it thing. And I think that if we were in the final couple weeks of September, I think George Springer's probably finding a way to play every day. Certainly if we're in October, he's playing every day.
2-0 from Ray is hit pretty well to right field. Moore's going back over his head, and it is gone. Springer lines one to the opposite field to give the Blue Jays a 1-0 lead.
That gets the Blue Jay fans up and cheering with one swing of the bat.
But as we sit here in early August, you know, I think that this sort of intermittent availability is just, you know, what's most realistic for Springer and the Blue Jays as they try to manage this thing and get him to the end of the year.
He doesn't look right, though. You know, he doesn't. And I think you don't have to be a scout to say that, although I did have one evaluator say his swing looks off. But, you know, you can just look at his grimaces after he swings. It's discomfort. It's clear discomfort. So anyway, we'll see what happens there with Springer. But clearly the Merrifield acquisition is connected to that, right? Because whether it's an inning, whether it's a game, whether it's a week, Merrifield's someone who can play center field for this team. And I'm really curious to see how he looks defensively, right? Because the Jays said that they were comfortable with Raimel Tapia in center field, and then all of a sudden he's not really a great defensive center fielder. So is Merrifield going to be good enough? What's his arm like? What's his range like? What's his decision making like? I'm curious to see him defensively.
Curious to see how they get him on the roster. There's a lot of curiosity around how this is all going to play out. It's a curious season for Whit Merrifield, right? Because it doesn't look like the Whit Merrifield seasons that we grew accustomed to earlier in his career. And look, like, he's 33, he's past his prime, obviously he's on the back nine, but like when you kind of dive deeper into the year that he's had, his numbers are just dragged down significantly by this insane slump they started the year in. Like, we're talking about like the first 100 plus plate appearances of the year where he was like a 135 hitter. Like, he was just knocking on base, not hitting, no power, like just miserable at the plate. He got dropped, and this is the Royals, like, and he is like Royals, I don't know, like, icon at this point, really, in modern day Royals history. He got dropped to number 8 in the Royals batting order. Like, that's how bad it got. You know, Whit Merrifield spent like a half decade more leading off or hitting second for the Royals. He was dropped right down to the bottom. Like, that's how bad things were earlier this year. And ever since like mid-May, he has just been like trying to drag himself out of that hole. And the crater was so deep that like his season-long numbers are still very underwhelming. But if you break it down, since mid-May, in over 300 plate appearances, I think it's 310 plate appearances, he has like a 112 weighted runs created plus. Like, he's been perfectly solid since he got out of that early season slump. Over the first 5 to 6 weeks, like, his barrel rates are fine, the exit velos, the strikeout walk rates are all good, hard hit rate, like, all the peripheral stuff is there and everything is fine. So you just have to consider like that the season long sample, I don't think really reflects the hitter that he has been, especially over, you know, especially since like mid-May, especially over the last 2.5 months. And I think that he's better than his season long numbers would indicate. And I still think there is some of that Whit Merrifield that you would remember from 17, 18, 19 in there. It'll be interesting to see if the Blue Jays get it.
Even from 2021, like last year, he stole 40 bases and hit 40 doubles. You know, he was a really good player last year. And this year, like you said, I mean, he started really badly. Since then, he's been good. Like, he's a good player. He's a good baseball player. You want him on your team. He's not necessarily prime Whit Merrifield, but versatile, doesn't strike out a lot. And he can really run the bases well and steal bases, which he does continue to steal bases. So he's a good player. Like, you definitely improve your roster by adding Whit Merrifield to it. I'm intrigued to see how he fits into this lineup, how they use him. Does he hit seventh? Does he lead off on days that George Springer isn't in the lineup? You know, I'm curious to see how much he plays second base versus center field, how good he is defensively at second base, how well he's able to handle the demands of center field. So I think a lot of questions here around Merrifield, but ultimately, you know, ever since really that first month of the season, he's been an above average major league player, and those guys are always good. You know, you never have enough above average major league players who can fit a few different spots defensively.
Yeah, and he's still rocking the 266 BABIP, which like tells you something about the kind of luck that he's had on balls in play. And this is a guy who puts a lot of balls in play, doesn't strike out much at all, a really high contact bat. The career BABIP is 323, and he's got a 266 this year, right? So that tells you something. And I think that the expected statistics tell you something as well. Like, there are sizable gaps between expected batting average and actual batting average, expected WOBA and actual WOBA. Like, I think he's been unlucky this year. So we'll see if that luck turns around for the Blue Jays. Like, I'm not trying to tell you he's going to be peak prime Whit Merrifield, but I think he's a sneaky good pickup. And also the fact that like he's under contract next season at 675. I mean, that is totally reasonable for what Whit Merrifield's going to bring you. Like, you could foresee a scenario where he is providing a ton of surplus value in 2023 at $6.75 million. If, like you said, like the sprint speed is still really strong defensively. I mean, you know, defensive metrics, you can take them or leave them. They can be a little unreliable, but like, he grades out well at a variety of positions. Like, I think he's kind of like a sneaky good pickup for the Blue Jays at the deadline. It's like I was saying before, each of these Blue Jays trades at the deadline, I really like in a vacuum. You just look at each trade individually, I'm like, that makes sense. That's a good transaction. That makes the Blue Jays better. That raises the floor. That addresses concerns going forward. That makes them better not only for the rest of 2022, but also for 23 and 24. I just think that if they were going to be like World Series contender, deep playoff run, we feel really good heading into a 7-game series, they needed more impact.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're probably better positioned right now to withstand an injury on the position player side because of Whit Merrifield and because of Kevin Biggio, of course, his versatility. I think they have some flexibility there. On the pitching side, it's like we said, with Stripling now out, like, what happens if someone else goes down in the bullpen? What happens if Jimmy Garcia, you know, ends up needing a bit of a rest? Like, you start to get thin. But on the position player side, Merrifield gives them that nice layer of depth.
Yeah, and I mean, just, it's another player who's going to be part of this team in 23. Like, you look at, like, who's a pending free agent on this club heading into next season? Ross Stripling, David Phelps. I can't think of anyone else, right? Like, this club, this core, like, is together for 23 as well. And, like, you know, not for nothing, Ross Atkins mentioned continuity a few times, like, when discussing this deadline and the importance of not removing from the big league roster. So, like, when you're heading into the offseason as the Blue Jays, not to get ahead of ourselves, but, like, you can really kind of hone in on, okay, what's our biggest weakness? Like, what's our biggest area of need? And I think that's going to be the bullpen. I think that's going to be swing and miss, and that's going to be strikeouts there, obviously. So you're going to spend the rest of this season kind of evaluating what you have internally in, say, a Pearson, a Merriweather, a Zulueta, a Younger, whether those guys could be realistic bullpen pieces next year. And then you go out on the free agent market or in trade and look at who's available, and you have a very clear area that you can address going into 2023 and say, all right, maybe we're paying for reliever in free agency now, right? Like, maybe we're doing the Liam Hendricks deal now. Like, maybe we're taking on the Raisel Iglesias money now. Like, you go out and you make that move in the offseason, I think you feel pretty good about your club in 2023. Not to get past 22. Blue Jays are going to the postseason. Yeah. And like I said, if you're in the tournament, man, anything can happen in that tournament. But I do think the Blue Jays at this deadline position themselves well for 23 and ahead.
Yeah, honestly, I think for 2023, I think the Jays are arguably the best team in the American League. The Yankees don't have Judge in 23 right now. Astros have some free agents too. Like, the Jays will remain one of the top teams going into next year. It's just, you know, this year, yeah, anything can happen. The downside of anything can happen is you could be at the trough staring down Jason Adam and, you know, down one game, season on the line, and all of a sudden, you know, you're done, you know, 2 games in. So that's an outcome that you really want to avoid. And, you know, we'll see. It's still going to be fun to see where this team leads. And maybe they'll surprise us. Maybe this bullpen will be better than expected, or maybe it will be exactly as expected. And they'll, you know, they'll have to pitch to contact a little bit more than they would ideally want to.
Or you're facing the Astros in like a DS or a CS, and it's, here comes like Alvarez, Bregman, Tucker in a really big spot late in the game, and you're like, let's see if Tim Meza can get through this.
Exactly. Or what if Meza's been used twice in a row, and like, then you're going to Richards? Like, it's, yeah. I mean, we're getting granular here, but it's they could have used more.
That's going to be it for us. His name's Ben Nicholson Smith. He's on Twitter at @BNicholsonSmith. My name's Arden Zwelling. I'm in Minneapolis through the weekend. You can follow what's going on with the Blue Jays. And trust me, there's going to be a lot of news coming out of Minneapolis this weekend. That's all at sportsnet.ca. I want to thank our producers, Nick Andrade, Christian Ryan. I want to thank all of you for listening. As always, talk to you next time on At the Letters.